entertainer, and entrepreneur answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They team with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Larry Adams, Nostra Dennis, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend. The end of our elaborate plans. The end of everything that stands. The end. No safety or surprise, the end. I'll never look into your eyes again.
Larry Adams for the best in true political professional wrestling. The American Adversaries Drive Time on News Talk 660 WORL. And tonight, I am broadcasting live from my new safety location, under my bed. Can anyone hear me out there? Is anyone left after the horrible disaster where the earth shifted on its axis? Super volcanoes erupted everywhere, even Apopka. The planet Saturn is hurtling towards us, and the surface of our planet will get as hot as the inside of a freshly baked biscuit. Yes, billions have perished, and the remaining few wait for Satan and an army of the dead to take over our world. All this because the federal government shut down today. Add this irony to Obamacare sign-ups starting today and the looming debt crisis, and it's obvious. This is what the Mayan calendar was warning us about. Not some stupid planetary lineup. This is worse. My co-host tried to warn you about this. And now here he is, broadcasting from under his blankie, Christopher Hart.
Okay, welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, Larry Adams. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being...
Did that sound tongue-in-cheek?
Sort of. Thank you, folks, for being with us tonight. That's right. We are the American Adversaries, and we're still here. We're still going
to work. We're still live.
And we are live, and the number is 407-774-8255. That's 407-774-8255. And I hope you noticed the little bump music that we've replaced Gloria Estefan with tonight. You know, this is the end. If you would listen to some politicians, even some talk show hosts, like the guy that comes on right before us, you know, Michael Medved, you would think that this is the end of the world, or if not that, the end of the United States, or if not that, at least the end of the Republican Party. But as is in character of our show, we're here to tell you that it ain't none of that at all. As a matter of fact, what we're seeing going on in Washington, D.C. proves that our system is working just fine. Thank you very much. And what in the world does he mean by that? Well, let me just go back, and we used to do this all the time. We don't have time on our Drive Time show to do this every day, but I'm going to do it again today. And that is basically give an explanation of why we call our show the American Adversaries, and what does that have to do with what's going on in Washington, D.C.? Only everything. Ladies and gentlemen, we call our show the American Adversaries because we, not just Lair, Nostra Dennis, and I, but all of us, if you're an American citizen, you're an American adversary. And that is because we have been blessed with an adversarial form of government, a form of government that was inspired by our Creator and purposely designed through our founding fathers so that we may not have to endure a tyrannical form of government, be it tyranny of one or the many. And oh, by the way, folks, tyranny has been the norm all throughout history on this planet. Hence the phrase American exceptionalism. It is because our form of government, our way of life, is the exception in human history. And, oh, we're not kidding around when we say that politics is a whole lot like professional wrestling. You got to admit, what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now is proof enough of that. You have the theater of the absurd. You have the grandstanding. You have the chest thumping. You have the blame game going on. You have the backroom deals that are actually going on. And then, of course, you have the media out there telling us who the good guys and who the bad guys are. So let's just say, folks, everything is working just fine, even though the government has been shut down for a couple of days. And there is definitely a way out of this. Obviously, the Republicans could give in and just go ahead and send a clean continuing resolution to the Senate and be done with it. Or they could get a little clever, which I kind of hope they do, and do what they did over the weekend, which happened without any fanfare at all. And that is that when the House passed the second, I believe it was, variation of their continuing resolution with the Congress and sent it over to the Senate, they sent a separate bill which continued to pay for military personnel in the event of a shutdown. And that quietly passed through the Senate unanimously, and it is presently now, I believe, either has been signed or will be signed by the President of the United States. Lo and behold, they got something done.
So there was some cooperation there.
Absolutely. And then quietly today, Harry Reid showed up on the Senate floor and announced that they're going to appoint conferees for the Farm Bill. Remember, we discussed the Farm Bill a couple of weeks ago on our show. So there are things happening. And so what the Congress, what the House of Representatives should do is they should go down a list, prioritize the list, and start with, say, let's say the Veterans Administration. Go to the V's first. The Veterans Administration, fund that. Send that bill over to the Senate. Say you did, you signed, you know, you approved the bill for the military. Let's do this one. And then just go down the list. Go down the list. Go down the list. But I want to talk about something else, folks, tonight. I want to spend a lot of time talking about this. We're going to have plenty of time to talk about what's going on in the government. It looks like it's going to be shut down for a couple of days. We'll definitely be talking about it tomorrow and the next day and probably the day after that as well. But sometimes we just need to take time out of the typical goings-on in our world to concentrate on our loved ones, if you will. And at the most recent NFL Players Association meeting, you know, at a lot of the meetings now, they're talking about things like concussions and dementia and things like that. And as we got to the meeting last week, I looked over and sitting in one of the booths, I saw someone who looked familiar. And I didn't think I'd ever met this individual before, but he sure looked familiar. So I grabbed Nostradamus and I said, "Who's that?" And he said, "Well, that's George Diaz of the Orlando Sentinel." I said, "Oh, I wonder what he's doing here. Must, you know, covering a football story or something." Actually, George was covering something much more special than that. And if anybody knows anything about adversarial relationships, it would, of course, be George Diaz, because he is an editorialist and columnist for the sports page at the Orlando Sentinel. And I want to welcome him into the studio tonight. George, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here, Chris, and promoting, obviously, a cause that's dear to my heart.
And that cause happens to be, folks, Alzheimer's disease. George and I have something in common. We both lost our mothers to Alzheimer's disease. He in 2009, me in 2010. We also have in the studio with us a young lady that I met that night as well with George, and her name is Joan Giovanni, and she's with the local Alzheimer's Association. Joan, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much for including me.
And you lost your mother as well.
In 2008, I did.
So we all have something like that in common, and more and more and more families across this nation, George, are finding that they have that in common with us as well.
Yeah, the sad fact, and Joan, I think, can back me up on some of these stats, is I think it's 5.5 million people or so in the United States have the disease or some form of Alzheimer's right now. And with the baby boomers living longer, that pain train, if you will, it's going to be worse because obviously one of the number one thing that you're dealing with Alzheimer's disease is age. As you age and get older, you're much more susceptible to come down with Alzheimer's disease. So this, unfortunately, there is no cure for Alzheimer's. There's clinical research going on all the time, but unfortunately there is no cure. So unfortunately these numbers are just going to grow.
Now, George, I do believe there has been a lot of progress with Alzheimer's, because, you know, the treatment years ago was almost nothing. And it seems like they've done
I don't know that there's so much progress as that there's more research maybe going into it, but there hasn't really been any significant progress, has there been?
Well, I will say, though, that while we don't currently have the drugs to treat the disease, what we're finding more is greater awareness. The biggest thing is getting people to understand about Alzheimer's disease so that people can be diagnosed earlier. People are recognizing symptoms earlier. So part of it, in addition to the baby boomers, is just the greater awareness of the symptoms and people getting diagnosed. The research is ongoing from multiple fronts, both in terms of treatments and drugs. We have not had any major breakthroughs, unfortunately, recently to share, but they're continually going through the trial process as you want them to. There are drugs that are available for people in the early stages that will help slow down the progression of the disease, which is the best we can do at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, the top 10 causes of death in America, it is the only one for which there's no way to cure or stop the progression.
Okay, when we come back, folks, we're going to be telling you a little bit more about the Alzheimer's Association and an event coming up at the end of this month that we would like all you folks to come out and help us and participate in it. Once again, we are the American Adversaries, and Danny McKnight is going to be joining us in the second half hour as well. He was at Arlington Cemetery yesterday, he was at Fort Benning Cemetery today, and he's going to tell us about the soldiers that he visited there. Please stick around. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I took on the Iron Sheik from Iran. I took on Nikolai Volkov from the USSR. I took on Andre the Giant from France. I just want you to know, time for more political mayhem with the American Adversaries. Tough guy, how about a ho?
Okay, and away we go. That's right, folks. We are the American Adversaries. It is drive time. It is a beautiful afternoon here in Central Florida, and I hope you're enjoying our show today. 407-774-8255 is the number. We're talking about Alzheimer's disease right now with George Diaz from the Orlando Sentinel and Joan Giovanni from the Alzheimer's Association. George, and I'm Christopher Hart along with Lair Adams. George, when we met you, it was at the NFL players meeting, and why were you there, and what's going to be happening toward the end of the month?
Well, I was there at the behest of your good friend and mine, Mike McBath, with the NFL Players Association, and he was kind enough to let me come and make a little bit of a pitch, if you will. There is, as part of this effort to try to make inroads with in finding a cure for this insidious disease, there will be a walk to end Alzheimer's at Lake Eola Park Saturday, October 26th at Lake Eola, starting at 8 a.m. in the morning. And Joan is part of the local chapter here of the Alzheimer's Association, which is the biggest fundraising arm for Alzheimer's disease in the nation. So we're talking about, obviously, a very strong and a very, a very powerful group that's doing the best that it can to make inroads in getting and finding a cure for Alzheimer's.
And obviously NFL ex-players are, this is very important in their lives because of the concussion factor and the lawsuit that they had with the NFL and everything. Are they going to participate in the walk?
Well, we're hoping. I'm going to talk to Mike and maybe he can get out there.
We're going to twist his arm.
Let him get him out there.
Yeah, we'll...
As you know, I mean, sometimes it's hard to split hairs between what's dementia and what's Alzheimer's. But if you look at all the stories and you look at somebody like Jim McMahon who has to have directions to how to get back to his house, that type of thing.
Folks, he's talking about the quarterback of the Chicago Bears, who's probably maybe in his 50s now.
Probably early 60s. I would venture to say late 50s. But yeah, he was such a personality back in the day.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The Super Bowl Shuffle, all that stuff, and the poor guy has a short term memory loss that is pretty frightening. And this is it used to be that you say, well, punchers, they get punch drunk, that type of thing. That's expected. But where you're seeing more and more these players that get battered, I mean, think about what a collision is. I mean, Mike could tell you about that a lot better than I could.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's like being in a car wreck, and, multiply that times X number of plays, 30, 40 plays a game.
George, let me ask you this. Is there any evidence that some of this trauma can lead to Alzheimer's?
Well, that's where, with the lawsuit and everything, the NFL was very
smart.
Because
you said there's a bit of a difference there, possibly.
Yeah, well, there's what happened with that lawsuit is the NFL basically said, well, look, we're not culpable, but here's some money.
Right.
Because they don't want to admit all of these issues that, you know, concussions and brain damage
right.
and all these other, I mean, it's all part of, unfortunately, Larry, it's all, you know, however you want to label yeah. it, there obviously is damage being done. To
right.
the brain because of repeated hits. I mean, it only makes sense. The helmet
right.
can only do so much, and we go back to the days where you know that the protection wasn't as much. Now the protection is better, but now you've got 300-pound guys who run a 4.5 40,
right.
and there's where you run into problems now.
The force of the blow.
That you've got tremendous athletes that are just getting bigger and better, and the protection, the layers of protection are just whittled down.
Joan, the Alzheimer's Association really is beside the point how they got there. You know, when they do have the disease, be it Alzheimer's or dementia, that they can't differentiate, what can somebody do if they need some help in that area? Does the Alzheimer's Association provide guidance, assistance in finding treatment for someone that they feel like they've come down with Alzheimer's or some family member?
Definitely. Anyone who's got any questions about is this Alzheimer's or even if they've gotten a diagnosis and they just need to know about resources in their community, we encourage them to call our 24/7 helpline. The number is 800-272-3900. And it's not necessarily a crisis line. It's for people to call and get information.
Right.
You know, when I was caring for my mother with Alzheimer's disease and I would call the helpline, and for me it was just like having this wise older friend who always had great advice to give me so I didn't feel alone. And I really
mm-hmm.
encourage your listeners to write down that number and reach out to ask the questions. Don't wait until it's too late and it is a crisis situation. Start asking now about what your options are for service in the home. What are your options for another place for your loved one to live? How you would pay for it? All of those questions, start asking them now so people can be prepared. That's one of the many services that we provide, and it's all done free of charge.
Real quickly, my producer, Nostradamus, just notified me Jim McMahon is 54.
Wow.
He's a year younger than me. Yeah, it is
frightening.
But it's not entirely unheard of for young people to get Alzheimer's disease. Unfortunately, you told me something, Joan, before the show that was very frightening for the younger people who get it.
Yes, people that are diagnosed prior to 65, the younger that you're diagnosed with the disease, the faster the progression of the symptoms, generally speaking. So in that case, it doesn't help to be young and healthy. They tend to go through the stages much more quickly. And I'll tell you, we have a national gathering of all of our chapters, and I learned back in February that we have a chapter that currently has someone in their 20s with Alzheimer's disease.
Mm.
So the biggest message we can get out is for people to understand that this is not your grandfather's Alzheimer's disease. This is
right.
affecting us, our neighbors, our friends, and because
right.
it doesn't come up in conversation, we're just not aware of it.
Right. You know, my mother passed away from Alzheimer's disease at the age of 87, but her younger sister passed away from Alzheimer's disease at the age of 71. So it cuts across, you know, age groups. You can get it at any time. Now, the walk that's coming up, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like you to join me. I'm going to be there along with George and Joan, and it's going to be 8 a.m. Saturday morning. October 26th, that'll be the last Saturday in October this year. It's going to be downtown at Lake Eola. I'm sure it's going to be a beautiful day. It'll be a beautiful time to get out for a morning walk. And I can't think of any better cause and to come out and help us raise some money. That's a part of the whole point here, too, is to help the organization here so that we can fight this disease and provide help to those who have family members or themselves have it. I know that I could have used, you know, when my mom and you can't get enough help when you're dealing with someone who has this particular disease. It killed my uncle. Taking care of my aunt killed my uncle. He actually died before she did.
Basically, of
exhaustion.
Yeah,
that happens with caregivers, as you well know. It's just it's so powerful and just so insidious is the word I keep coming up with. And my sisters, God bless both of them, they were in Miami where my mom was in a nursing facility for the last few years of her life. She had it maybe 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And they were there just about every day, you know, checking up on her, which is another, you know, but it does, as you know, it drains you mentally, emotionally, physically, in every which way, because you see your loved one deteriorate.
Yeah. Folks, when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with Joan and George. And just a heads up, we're also going to have Danny McKnight in the next half hour. And so our sponsors have allowed us to eliminate the commercial break in the middle of the next half hour. So when we come back, we're going to take you all the way to the top. So stick around.
407-774-8255 is the number if you have any questions about Alzheimer's, and we'll be back.
Here is tonight's American Adversaries Soundbite RX News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Tonight's Soundbite RX News Minute is brought to you by Roxy Pacifics. That's R-O-C-Z-E-Y Pacifics with an X.net. Roxy Pacifics is an all-natural kelp and vitamin-based antibacterial and anti-inflammatory. It is totally safe for kids, pets, and yourself. Do yourself a favor, RoxyPacifics.net. Now here's Christopher Hart with Ted Bogert of SoundbiteRx.com.
Okay, let's go now to Ted Bogert of SoundbiteRx.com. Ted, yesterday CNN announced that they are not moving forward with their documentary on Hillary Clinton. Does SoundbiteRx.com have the reason why?
Absolutely. Thanks, Chris. Yes, the director, Mr. Ferguson, said that as he began to dig into Hillary's past and the Clintons' past, He was basically stonewalled, and the more information he uncovered, the less people wanted to actually come forward and talk about things on camera.
So he was finding things out that they didn't want him to find out, in other words.
Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, one of the things, I mean, the Clintons, they have a net worth that exceeds $200 million, but they have one of their largest donors was the government of Saudi Arabia. I mean, there are things that he was uncovering. And this is not just limited to Democrats. Republicans, he even tried to get some archival footage from Pat Robertson's station, CBN, and was met with pretty much a no. And so he just realized that the media itself and the Clintons are doing a great job at burying the information because Hillary is the next president, according to them.
In fact, though, this cannot bode well for her presidential prospects.
Well, I don't think it bodes well if the rest of the media picks up and actually goes forward and tries to uncover some of this stuff. But if the mainstream media continues to bury it because either they can't get anyone on camera or they can't get anyone to keep the programs, then Hillary actually has won.
I guess the way they see it, it's better for the story to be buried than for them to be buried.
Absolutely, Chris.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Ted Bogert. That's Ted Bogert of SoundbiteRx.com, where you'll get the complete story on this story and many others. So take the cure for ignorance. Go to SoundbiteRx.com. We'll be right back.
Here comes Johnny B. Bad, and you don't want to make him mad.
Hello, this is Buck Merrill, former WCW World Television Champion Johnny B. Bad. It's a good day to be a bad man, but it's even a better day to listen to the American Adversaries. Better listen, don't let me come and get you, cause it's gonna be a blessing to teach you a lesson.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the show. That's right, we are the American Adversaries Drive Time. Lair Adams, Christopher Hart, Nostra Dennis is joining us here in just a few minutes, and we're joined in the studio today by George Diaz, who's from the Orlando Sentinel. Of course, you find him on the sports pages. I love reading his articles, by the way. And Joan Giovanni from the Alzheimer's Association of Central and North Florida. And Colonel McKnight's going to join us here briefly in a few minutes. We were just talking during the break, Joan, and as we went into the break, we were talking about caregivers, and that's something about this disease that it's, I can't say that it's unique, but it's perhaps one of the more significant parts of the disease is how much it affects the caregivers and people in the family.
That's so true. It, unfortunately, it's very common for the caregiver to pass away before their loved one due to the emotional and physical stress of the disease. We've done some recent surveys of people who are Alzheimer's caregivers and found that last year, people who are Alzheimer's caregivers had an additional $9.1 billion in caregiving, or I'm sorry, healthcare expenses of their own just because of the toll it took on them physically.
And you say that it is now what?
It is the most.
The costliest disease?
Yes.
Most expensive.
It's beginning this year. It is now the costliest malady in the United States, surpassing cancer and heart. It is now $203 billion is what it will cost this year.
Wow. Folks, you can find out more about Alzheimer's and the walk itself by going to ALZ.org. or if you want to find out about the walk, you just simplify it by going to alz.org/walk, alz.org/walk. And once again, it's going to be 8 a.m. October 26th, so you have plenty of time to plan between now and that last Saturday of this month, and I hope you'll join us at Lake Eola downtown for the walk. And there's going to be something that you say kind of special that you call the Promise Ceremony. Can you tell us a little about that?
One of the things that is really unique about the Alzheimer's Association Walk to End Alzheimer's is the Promise Ceremony. So each person, when they arrive at the walk, they're given a flower, and it's a pinwheel in the shape of a flower. The color represents your relationship to Alzheimer's disease. You'll get a blue flower if you're diagnosed, yellow if you're a caregiver, purple if you've lost someone, as I have, and orange if you're an advocate, if you're just there for the cause. And during the actual opening ceremony, we'll have one person representing each color on the stage. And the MC, who is Eric Von Aiken from our local CBS affiliate, we'll be talking about each color and that segment of the community that it represents, and everyone with that color will hold their flower in the air until one by one all the colors are raised. And it's a very moving experience. It's not a sad and overly dramatic. I don't want anyone to think that this is a depressing event in any way, but it, for caregivers, the feedback we get is they feel less alone when they see all the other people, and particularly all the other diagnosed individuals who are there who are experiencing the same thing. It's really a day of celebration and a very moving experience.
George, have you been on the walk before? I understand
they've
been doing this for years downtown there.
Yeah, this will be, I believe, my fifth year. Yeah. Joan's giving me a little pointer there. I didn't forget. But, yeah, it's been fifth, and it's really been moving for me. You know, I've been fortunate that I've been the chair, the local chair for the walk for 2 years, not recently, but when I first was involved. And then I've stayed involved working with Joan, trying to get some sponsors and obviously try to dig up as many dollars as we can. You know, personally, my team has raised close to $20,000 over that span of time. So I'm very proud of those efforts and those of my loved ones and very generous friends that I have for stepping up. So it's just, it's something that, you know, that now for us, for our family, it's become a wonderful way to be able to, you know, honor our mom's memory, and we all get together. You know, my family comes from Miami, and we make it a very special moment.
Well, I want to thank you for using your notoriety, your celebrity, if you will, to help raise money and awareness for this, because we're not the only ones, obviously, who are suffering from this because of our having had family members who actually had the disease itself. And, of course, they don't know if it's hereditary, so we might be looking at it ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, it's something that, folks, it's going to touch your life one way or the other. Lair, his mother doesn't have Alzheimer's, but your neighbor did, right?
Yes, across the street. Actually, her mother was diagnosed at 46, and I think I mentioned by the time she was 51, she couldn't recognize anyone, her own children, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. I remember the moment that I realized later was the last time my mom was actually in touch with reality, until right before she died, which was very interesting. But we were watching the old Beverly Hillbillies, and it was the episode where Jethro had converted the truck to a spy truck, and Granny pulled the lever, which was for the ejection seat, and it shot her out. My mom laughed. It was the last time she ever connected what she was seeing with reality, and she suffered for about 6 years after that.
It's interesting that we all have those moments, and even as my mom declined, I think that, you know, kind of humor, as weird as it sounds sometimes, you try to remember those good moments and the moments when they just, you just have to, because if you let it go to the dark side, like Joan was saying, it can really take a toll on you emotionally.
Okay. Well, listen, I see we have Colonel McKnight on the line now. Let's go to Colonel McKnight, and he's going to update us on his travels over the last couple of days. Colonel Danny McKnight of Black Hawk Down, you've written the book Streets of Mogadishu. It's an encapsulating book about the event. And this week is the 20th anniversary. As a matter of fact, the day after tomorrow would be October 3rd when the event began. I've got a couple of guests in the studio here. I've told them about you and the event and what you're doing right now. Please give us an update. Yesterday, I believe you visited Arlington Cemetery. And by the way, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you all for putting up with me again after I sort of missed you yesterday.
Well, you had pretty good reason. You visited Arlington Cemetery in the morning, and you kind of needed to go out and take a little run after that. I don't blame you.
Yeah, and Colonel, we're so glad to have you today because we knew you were driving out of your way to go sign up for Obamacare, right?
That's what I was really thinking about yesterday.
I knew you and Linda were going to go be the first ones in line.
By the way, I was with someone this morning who tried that, and they got the message, and it said, wait here. And he said, what am I supposed to do? Can I go to the bathroom? It says, wait here. I said, well, no. Anyway, Colonel McKnight, earlier this or last Friday, you told us about Corporal James Cavaco, the man you called the quiet pro. You told us Sunday night about Sergeant Dominic Pila, the man you told us enjoyed life. Yesterday, you visited the grave sites of Sergeant James Casey and PFC Richard Kowalewski, Jr. at Arlington. Please tell us a little about your experience there yesterday and about those gentlemen, those soldiers.
Yesterday, as I did talk to you later last night, it's always a memorable time when you go to Arlington National Cemetery. And I guess yesterday, you know, being coming up on the 20th year and visiting it there, and not only those two guys, but I have other close friends who are also buried there. And so it's my two guys, but also the other friends that I have. My first sergeant that was in Somalia with me is buried there. He died about 6 months, about a year after Mogadishu. He died in a parachute accident with the battalion. The guy that was a commander before me, he died in a helicopter crash. That was one reason I came out of command in Hawaii early to take it from him, and he had been killed in a helicopter crash. You know, so there's so much that goes along with Arlington. And then we were there yesterday, of course, and I'll talk about those two young men in just a second. But I guess part of the day that really impacted me also was while we were there in that hour and a half, we walk from the parking area in, we walk all the way to the grave sites, and it's quite a walk, but we witnessed two funerals going on while we were there yesterday, and we heard the taps.
It must have brought back some pretty painful memories for you.
Yeah, the taps, the 21-gun salute, four strong, you know, coffins, it does. So that's the reason, I guess, that I needed that run so bad yesterday, and I appreciate you understanding that. But when I look at those two young men, and as I said to you, and I'll say to others now, my two Rangers are buried almost side by side. There's one grave site in between the two of them, and it's the grave site of Master Sergeant Grizz Martin, who was a Delta Force operator in Somalia, and he was killed there as well. So they have the Delta Force operator in between two Rangers, and that's sort of the way we operate. The Delta guys are the main guys making the surgical hit, and we're the ones that support them, assist them, and provide the security so they can do what they got to do. So that's what we were doing in Somalia, that building that day. The Rangers were on the outside securing it, so none of the bad guys got in, and none of the bad guys got out, and the Delta guys did their thing. So that's where we were. It was a beautiful morning. We got there about 8 o'clock yesterday morning, and Casey Joyce, he was my only married soldier in terms of family that I had to deal with. His wife, Deanna, was there at Fort Benning. So that was a very different thing, because when you have to go see the wife after you get back and everything, it's a moment you don't ever want to have to deal with, but it's one when you do, you never forget it. And I will actually see Deanna in Dallas for the reunion. She's going to be there. She's remarried and has two kids. And Casey's brother's going to be there with his wife, and sister's going to be there with her husband and his aunt. So it's going to be a great thing to see family members there. Sergeant Casey Joyce, his father was retired military, helicopter pilot in Vietnam. And I think Casey really picked, you know, his desire up to be in the military from his father, who has passed away from cancer. But Casey was the biggest thing I always thought about him. What a super young man that is already a great leader of young soldiers. And he was. He didn't become a sergeant E5 as quickly as he did without the ability to lead. And he really learned it well. And that's what he was doing that day. He was leading soldiers in the fight in the streets right there with me in the convoy. And that's what I'll always remember about Sergeant Casey Joyce. that young leader who, God, would have probably been a sergeant major by now, you know, that kind of person. Richard Kowalewski, he was driving the truck. He was the one that is depicted in the movie getting hit by an RPG in the truck. That is somewhat, not quite 100%, but very, very well portrayed. He was driving that truck that day. He's normally a guy carrying a gun, but we had to have some guys drive trucks, and he stepped up and did it. And, you know, he was probably one of the quietest people you would ever be around, too. Let me tell you, he just, you know, he was still a young E4, and he was, you know, the youngest one that we had was him. He was the young man. And so when you look at all of them, every one of them has a certain little trait that stood out to me, and that's the way I would describe those two guys.
That was yesterday at Arlington Cemetery. Did you visit the cemetery at Fort Benning today? Is that my understanding?
Yes, we stayed here in Atlanta last night, drove down to Benning today. It's only about a 90-minute drive, easy drive. Drove down there and went to, first thing I did was we went to 3rd Ranger Battalion, and I spent some time over in Bravo Company, the company that was in Somalia with me. They are deployed right now to faraway lands, as you can imagine, doing what they do. But there was a few people there, like there always are, that stay behind. And so I went over there so that I could look at the pictures again of those guys on the wall there and stuff like that, even though I have their pictures. I wanted to be there and walk, you know, and see the pictures that they have of them. And it just so happened that one of the young men that was a stay behind, because they want him to stay for a couple reasons. One, he's getting ready to go to a very special schooling. But the other reason, he needs to be at Fort Bragg for a ceremony this weekend as well with his mother and sister. And his name is Sergeant Ian Gordon. His father was Master Sergeant Gary Gordon, the Medal of Honor recipient from Mogadishu when he went into the second helicopter site. And Ian was there. I got to talk to him again today. I love it when I get to talk to him. He's now a Sergeant E5 in Bravo Company that was in Somalia with his father. And Ian is just an awesome future soldier, let me tell you. He is just doing it all already. He's going to be just as great as his father. There's no doubt in my mind. He may even be a Delta Force operator someday down the road. So we got to see him. After we left 3rd Battalion, we went to the cemetery at Fort Benning. And we spent time with Corporal Jamie Smith, the one that died from the femoral artery wound out there that night. And I talked to Jamie's parents on occasion. They know that we were doing that today, and they'll be at the ceremony at Fort Bragg also this coming weekend. So, and they have two other sons that are in the military today. So Jamie Smith, God, everybody loved him. He was a character. He had fun, but a great young corporal, definitely going to be a great sergeant. And just everybody loved Jamie Smith. They really, really did. And I really, you know, when he said it, it said in the movie, coming out of his mouth in the movie, you know, when it was said that Colonel McKnight and the convoy is going back, Jamie said, if Colonel McKnight is taking the convoy back, there's a good reason for it. He'll be back for us.
Yeah. Colonel McKnight, thank you for being with us and helping us remember these fine gentlemen. I know it's tough for you this whole week, and so to talk with us about it like this, I just, you know, hats off to you. It was a powerful moment in the movie because you knew that he probably wasn't going to make it. But you had to take the convoy back. You did not have the option. You describe it in the book. You would have been creating more problems to proceed to try to get to where those guys were. You had to take the prisoners. You had to take the convoy back and get refitted. And you did go back, and you did get those guys. It's just tough for me to imagine what it must have been like for you, however, to make that decision.
Yeah, it was probably one of the hardest moments I had because I thought about two options. I can take them back. I need to get the prisoners back. I need to get rid of them, turn them over to the people there, and then we go back out. Plus, we're so shot up, I've got probably more people that will die in this convoy if I don't get them back. So that was sort of the one option. The other option was I can send the convoy back without me, and I can stay out there and be in the fight out there. And then I thought about, well, if I do that and something happens and the convoy don't get back, then I failed the mission that we were sent out there to do. So it was one of the hardest decisions that I had to make in my life, and I had to make it in a space of probably 60 seconds. So, yeah, it wasn't one I wanted to make, but I had to make it, and I think I made the right decision.
Colonel, you have been with the men, the survivors of this incident, for years. You've known them. How are they holding up? Are they doing okay? I mean, we see what war does to men psychologically, and we know the scars of war. How are these guys holding up?
Well, you know, in all honesty, I would tell you that by far they're doing very, very well. There's only one young 19-year-old that had any kind of, if you want to call it, post-traumatic stress. He was the one sitting in the back of the vehicle, hatchback, where Sergeant Pila got shot, and Sergeant Pila fell over in his lap. He was 19 years old, and Sergeant Pila got shot in the head, so I just leave it at that, and you can imagine what he felt. And he handled that well until he got out of the Army and left the Ranger Battalion. And then when you get away from your buddies and away from your support system, that's what can happen to you, and I think that's what we see happen today. And even, you know, it could happen to us. Besides that, there was one other staff sergeant that really had a tough time, but it wasn't because of that. It was because he got shot up in the leg really bad, and it hindered his future of doing what he wanted to do in the Rangers and stuff like that. So it wasn't anything other than he was just bothered by the fact he couldn't perform like he used to be able to perform. I think as a unit, we survived that together, and I think that's the reason this coming weekend with a reunion is going to be an awesome, awesome time.
All right. Well, thank you so very much for sharing all that with us, Colonel McKnight. We really appreciate it, and we'll look forward to talking with you. It looks like tomorrow night again, where you have one more stop, one more Ranger to visit, and until you get to that reunion. So you travel safely, and God bless you, and thank you so very much for everything you've done for this country.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, Chris. Appreciate it, Laura. And if one of y'all will give me a call back in 10 or 15 minutes, that'd be great.
We'll certainly do it.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Colonel.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Colonel Danny McKnight. And by the way, you can get his book, Streets of Mogadishu. You can order an autograph copy, by the way, at Danny McKnight. That's MC McKnight.com. DannyMcKnight.com, Streets of Mogadishu.
You know, Chris, that film, Black Hawk Down, that Danny was referring to, it's a very brutal film because it's so realistic, but it's nowhere near as realistic as the real thing.
Yeah.
And that's what he has lived through. And those are the experiences. He doesn't have movie shot experiences. He's got the real thing.
Yeah, nobody else cut, you know, in the middle of all that. You know, and if you mind me interjecting, talking, I went on my Android, and there was a very powerful story I read about where he went to see the premiere of the movie, as he shared this with you, that there was someone there. I'm trying hard not to get choked up, but there was someone there. He just stayed behind somewhere in Georgia, I guess, a movie theater, went to see in the afternoon by himself to reflect. And there was somebody else with who stayed, and they made eye contact. It was one of the Rangers.
Wow.
And they just like embraced for a few minutes. That's as powerful as it gets.
It certainly is. Colonel McKnight, we're so fortunate to have him part of our team. It's because of Colonel Danny McKnight that we know Mike McBath.
Sure.
Mike McBath was listening to our show when we had Danny McKnight on the show for the first time.
Totally impressed.
And called in and got together. So it's a great thing. And what you guys are doing is a great thing too, George. You know, I can't thank you enough and take my hat off to you enough that you've stepped up and you've lent your time and your effort and your, you know, wherewithal, if you will, to the Alzheimer's project, if you will, and the Alzheimer's Association. And Joan, you know, we all have this in common. But, you know, there's a lot of veterans out there who are suffering from Alzheimer's, too. I know when my mom was in the nursing home, there were veterans up and down the hall, right, you know, who were suffering from the same thing with her. So please, folks, come out and help us. Once again, where and when?
October 26th, at Lake Eola, 8 a.m.
and that's going to be a walk to defeat Alzheimer's. George, you're going to be there, right?
That's right. It's Team Diaz, and we'll be there supporting and honoring our mom, and as well as some friends. And it's just it's really, as I said before, it's a great way to honor the memory of your loved ones, those who are currently struggling with the disease. It really brings families together. And as Joan said, it's not a mournful thing. You might shed a tear or two simply because of the fact that, you know, when you remember, you obviously, as you remember and you honor your loved ones, that's you're going to get emotional. But there is a very much a kindred spirits there, and uplifting and positive, and it's usually a great day in the fall to take a nice brisk walk and then get ready for some. For some college football. How's that?
You know,
segue right
good
into
job.
That.
Yeah. Good
well,
job.
We're going to have you back to talk about this. Okay. It's my favorite sport.
But now you two, again, are soldiers in your own right in this particular kind of war. And personally, this is the good fight.
Okay.
It really is.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
And so you got a Team Diaz.
That's right.
We're
going
to have to come up with a Team American Adversaries.
There you go. I'm all about competition.
There you go. Team I knew Diaz you were an adversary. I knew you had it in you. So we're going to
start
that
Dennis.
Tonight.
Nostradamus. I'm going to start training him now.
Yeah, right. Get ready for that long, brisk walk around Lake Eola. Do the walk, the rocky thing. Start going up the steps, you know, somewhere. Yeah.
I think I'll try like that marathon guy did and do it backwards. Backwards?
Juggling, yes.
Yeah, juggling, that's right, he did. Larry could do the juggling part.
Yeah, all right, I can't juggle a checkbook.
Listen, I want to thank you guys so much for coming down and sitting in the studio with us today. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to do that. And we'll be helping you out along the way, and I'd like to have you back before the walk, just sort of refresh the whole thing. And ladies and gentlemen, if you have not been touched by Alzheimer's yet, you pretty well bet that sometime during your life you will be. So please come out and help us. The walk to defeat Alzheimer's, Saturday morning, October 26th at Lake Eola. And you can find out more at alz.org/walk. That's alz.org. And their helpline number is 800-272-3900. That's 800-272-3900. And we'll put this information on our Facebook site as well.
Don't forget, the government is shut down, but we're not. The American Adversaries will be back tomorrow.